reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 23, Text 7. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Kascharayanta Vabidura Odinam. Pamachutovo Vashato Babukshito. Ayo Advija Odanam Artinor Yadi. Sadhachavo Yachita Dharma Vittama. Lord Ram and Lord Achyuta are tending their cows not far from here. They are hungry and want you to give them some of your food. Therefore, O Brahmins, O best of the knowers of religion, if you have faith, please give some food to them. Om Jnana Timurandhasya Jnananjana Salakaya Taksurun Mulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Shayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Adadanas Chanam Dante Itam Yache Puna Puna Srimad Rupa Padam Boja Dulisham Janma Janmani Paragya Bhakti Risam Piyatnai Apaya mamana bipsamandam kripam buriya paraduka duki sanatanistam prabhumasriyami pancha kalpa tarubhyascha vipashindu vayebhacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar, Srivasade Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, I'll get hopefully quickly into the story in Katha. I've been following a kind of format that I will follow. I say something about the technicalities. One thing is this Sangha is growing, but my inclination is basically to now keep it the way it is. We've advertised enough. So those that are interested should now be here. And I just always try to communicate something about Vrindavan because so many people are here, have been here and visited here. And it's one of their experiences that really keeps them going in Krishna consciousness. I said that before, that Borijan once asked me, where is your faith lie? And our faith lies in our experiences of Krishna consciousness. And certainly one of the pleasant experiences is visiting Vrindavan. So just yesterday, it was so nice. I took prasadam at the Goshala. There's a new person in charge, and he works with Nandananda and his family. He's very nice. He has some experience there. And as I was talking to him, he mentioned to me that there was a strike of the workers. And now all the devotees had to do the work themselves. They weren't hiring people. And as I was meditating on it and meditating on my studies, I thought how wonderful it is, because the whole Lord Chaitanya came to give Rag Marg, spontaneous devotional service, and it means that we follow the residents of Vrindavan. And even in your practices, when you get to spontaneous devotion, the things that they do, the devotional activities they do, are the things that really attract you most. I mentioned before, one of the main things that happen in the spiritual world is kirtan. Cowherd boys, the gopis, the parents of Krishna, they're always doing kirtan. They're always glorifying Krishna. But another thing they do is they take care of the cows. And I thought how unfortunate it is that I grew up in New York City and my main samskar is for asphalt and cement and for crowds. And and I was seeing how devotees are going over and doing the work, but I'm just thinking how much they can do the work and actually aspire. Aspire actually for to be gopis and gopis. One time when I took Tamal Krishna Maharaj to Gita Nagari, I somehow arranged the last time he ever saw Radha Damodar. When he saw, I know she listens to this by tape, so she'll be terribly embarrassed, but when he saw Mother Kalini up in the morning taking care of the cows and then coming back and cooking for Radha Damodar, he said, what more is there need to do? That's already perfection. What she's doing is what you're going to do in the spiritual world. So this rural culture, I know some of the devotees in Jersey are listening, and they like to go to Gita Nagari, and they like to bring their children by the cows. Because what is Vrindavan? Vrindavan is Gokul. It's Golok. It's the place of the cows. And very interesting, we have a very, I should mention this too, we're so fortunate there's a temple president here. He's really pure and has Brahminical pages. In a very gentle way, he's carrying on the project, but gaining authority. So very interesting, you know, we have so much land. This place around the temple is growing like a city, but we have about 10 acres of land by the Goshala. And you know, his plan, what does he want to do with it? It's worth millions and millions of dollars. I'll show you what a Brahminical consciousness is. He wants to leave the whole thing open and make a brudge forest and park. That's for the devotees. So when they can actually come to Vrindavan and come near our temple, even while they're here, they can actually experience brudge, which is actually pasturing lands and forests, which will serve as an inspiration for their Krishna consciousness. So that's one thing I did sitting at the Goshala there. And I mentioned also that sometimes I share my realizations and share of others. There's one nice devotee that's here, a godbrother of mine. I can say that not all the realizations that people give me I can share, and not all the time can I identify the people. But he's a very nice devotee who has a very, very, is a wonderful preacher dedicated to Prabhupada's movement. And he's also not only a dedicated preacher to Prabhupada's movement, he's very, very deep in his remembrance of Krishna. And he sometimes shares this to me. And he told me how he gravitates more and more to Gaur Lila. And he gravitates more and more to Gaur Lila. And he was telling me some of the experiences how his consciousness just gets drawn to Lord Nityananda, absorbed, spontaneous. And I was thinking, actually, we shouldn't think that what's being described in the books are only in the books, but I'm very, very confident in the association I have that it's right in our movement that people are experiencing devotional ecstasy by the incredible mercy that comes from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when you serve his mission. And I'm my realization myself, I'm here in Vrindavan, and whatever little taste I got, there's one phone if someone just recently got on, that seems not to have a good connection. But anyway, if there's any taste, any drop, any knowledge I get of transcendental knowledge or any taste of bhakti, there's no doubt it comes from the surrender and service to Srila Prabhupada and Sri Chaitanya's mission. And the fact that we're able to hear the 10th canto with some adequate frame of reference so we can actually appreciate its transcendental nature, that also is certainly Prabhupada's mercy. And I'm thinking what I'm going to do after I finish the lectures on the Sunday and the Monday after I finish, then one of them I'm going to start Gaur Lila. So I'll have Gaur Lila on one day, and Krishna Lila on the other. And then in those sanghas, I'll keep on rotating them. So when I finish Krishna Lila on one, I'll go to Gaur Lila, because Gaur Lila gives us special access to bhakti. Gaur Lila is, Krishna Lila is 5,000 years ago, Gaur Lila is 500 years ago. Even in terms of time, there's proximity. In terms of the activities, there's proximity. We can identify, even in one way, more readily with Audharya or mercy than we can with Madhurya or sweetness. And through that Audharya or mercy, that compassion of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when we meditate on his lila and we meditate on his heart, and naturally, I had mentioned before, one of the main ways that we advance is by meditating on great spiritual personalities. Their qualities come to us. That's a fact. So when that Audharya, that mercy comes to us, it opens our heart in a way in which we can absorb Gaur Lila. And this was Srila Prabhupada's, Krishna Lila. We can absorb it. And this is one of Srila Prabhupada's emphases in his own bhajan pranali, his method of approaching the pastimes of Krishna. Now, I have so many other realizations, but I think I should get into the pastimes. I'm just saving them. If I run out of things to say, then I'll have them. And maybe I'll incorporate them. Now, I mentioned also sometimes about something about smarn, how it takes purification of heart. But, of course, the goal is to remember Krishna and not forget him, and we can also engage in smarn. Maybe not as our main practice in depth, but we should certainly try to remember Krishna. So what I'll do every time, and before we get, I'll review by telling the story up until the point we're lecturing, and you should try to meditate on Krishna. You should try to think of Krishna, who is, we can't imagine the beauty of Krishna. We're attracted to some, we can imagine, just think of something that you think is beautiful and attracts you very much. And just think what an insignificant fragment that is of Sri Krishna's beauty. Think of a sound or a song that really gets you going and how you like to hear the melody. And just think that that sound or song is just a fraction, not even a fraction. We can't imagine what the sounds of the spiritual world are, what the taste and what the vision of Krishna is. So in some way, we'll try to meditate and think of Krishna. I was thinking in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when Gop Kumar is going through the layers of the universe, and it's a test, because to actually enter into Goloka Vrindavan, we have to have a higher attraction for that than anything in this world. You have to have a pure desire. So he goes through the layers of the universe, and each layer of the universe, it's described as the universe, and the next layer is 10 times as thick, and then 10 times. So the universe is actually a small seed within these layers of the material elements, and each of the material elements represent, like earth represents fragrance, and naturally water represents taste, fire, vision. So when he goes through all these elements, He has to confront and overcome the sum total of material sense stimulation. Can you imagine going through the layer of water with unlimited cuisines and tastes that you have access for? Swimming in all those tastes? Or going through the layer of ether and all the sounds that you hear, and the most sweet, and getting to actually the ultimate taste, the ultimate sound, the ultimate vision. And that's Krishna. That's what the absolute reality is. Absolute reality means the ultimate sight, the ultimate taste, the ultimate sound, the ultimate fragrance. Can you imagine the fragrance of Krishna's body? And it's described in the book, Madhurya Kadambini. What happens when a living entity goes to the spiritual world and he enters into the spiritual world, and the first thing he does is he sees Krishna, and he faints from that sight and that vision of beauty, that unlimited beauty. He faints. And then Krishna says, my dear devotee, please wake up. And then he hears Krishna's voice. And it's so overwhelming that all the senses hear Krishna. For example, if you mentioned, if I mentioned to you the sound of a person, if you hear, like you're hearing my voice, hopefully those of you know me, you also see me. So through the sound, you're also experiencing my vision. So in the same way, one experiences Krishna through all the senses. So let's now go on to this story. Amritananda, sound is okay? Amritananda?
Yes, Maharaj.
Okay, sound is okay. So we'll go on to this story, and we'll try to... Now, there's cowherd boys that are speaking. And, of course, they have this intimate friendship with Krishna. And these cowherd boys, there's friendship. It's a flavor of love, but this flavor of love comes in four ways. There's the sukhas, the four kinds, there's surid. These are older than Krishna. So he has friends that are older. And so there's some that are accompanying Krishna who to protect him from any kind of danger. And then there's sukha. Sukha means they're younger than Krishna. They have the younger friends, and they're eager to serve him. So Krishna means he's surrounded by all flavors of love and therefore all flavors of enjoyment. Five main relationships, but within the other relationship, there's so many flavors. And then there's Priya Sukha. Mm-hmm. Dear friends, they're Krishna's age, and they're the ones that wrestle with him and fight with him. And then there's Priya Narma Sukha, the most intimate friends who Krishna keeps no secrets, and they're led by Subal. So Krishna was with his friends, and they're tending the cows in this wonderful forest of Vrindavan, which is full of the most beautiful sights, the sweetest sounds, the most enticing fragrances, and all these things are moving out of love for Krishna, to give Krishna pleasure, and to create the right atmosphere for him to experience his internal potency, the chief of which is the Ladini Shakti, the pleasure potency, to the highest degree. So these friends, by this Leela Shakti, the pastime potency, which moves these pastimes, by Krishna has a determination to enjoy. That determination to enjoy manifests in his Leela or pastime Shakti, which operates these pastimes in such a way that it even creates surprises for Krishna. Because Krishna also wants surprises. And therefore, if he's just the omniscient divinity with not a potency to create surprises and even bewilder him in a transcendental way by his will, then he doesn't enjoy the expectations. So Lord Krishna and Balaram are tending their cows, and the cowherd boys, they tell Krishna that we're hungry. And knowing that Krishna also has a humility, because he's also the supreme enjoyer and reciprocates love, for his sake, they say, oh, we are hungry. We want food. Oh, Krishna, you should do something about this. And then Krishna naturally, wanting to please his devotees, Krishna with the lotus eyes and the peacock feather and the golden garments and Rupa Madhurya, the sweetest, most beautiful personality, who's always eager to serve his devotees, who's bound by his devotees' love. He desires to please his devotees and tells him to go to a sacrificial arena where there are Brahmins who are learned, Brahmavarina, in injunctions. And he tells him, when you go there, then you announce that you're coming, you announce my name, explain you've been sent by me. You announce, you do kirtan, jai Krishna Balaram. Prabhupada once said here, he said, if you want another mantra, you can chant in Krishna Balaram Magdir, Radhe Sham you know, Radhe Shyam Nitai Gaur Jai Krishna Balaram. This is not the Nitai Gaur mantra, but he said, well, I think it's Radhe Shyam Nitai Gaur Radhe Shyam, he said, Jai Krishna Balaram. So they're chanting kirtan. They're going to wake these Brahmins up. In the pastimes, we have to understand that the pastimes have a storyline which explains the philosophy. They have a story which explains the loving exchanges, and then there's a philosophical thread. And the philosophical thread of these pastimes is so nice that without being a devotee, humble in heart, you really can't deeply understand religion. Because religion or spiritual activities, they're meant to be used in a particular way. So the thing that makes something spiritual is the consciousness. The religion or the form of the activities is to assist the consciousness. It's to create the right mood for the consciousness to be invoked. So here they're thus instructed, you can see the cowherd boys, their hands are folded, they pay dandavats. They're before these Brahmins, and they address them, O earthly gods, we are executing the orders of Krishna, and we wish all fortune to you, because the greatest fortune that one could have is the service of Krishna. And now today's verse, and we'll see how we do. Lord Ram and Lord Pachuta tending the cows not far from here. They are hungry. So this is the ideal situation for someone who is spiritual conscious, that Krishna is here and he has a need for your service. They are hungry and want you to give them some of your food. Therefore, O Brahmins, O best of the knowers of religion, if you have faith, give them food. So they're not responding. Although they're the Brahmins, they're at the top, they're the gurus of society, and they're supposed to guide society by their knowledge, they're not responding. Krishna and Balaram, the object of their worship, is nearby. They cannot see the forest through the trees. The trees are like their religious principles, but the forest is Krishna. Through the tree, you're supposed to see the forest. If someone points to you, look at that beautiful scene, you can see it between these two branches. There is a Nilgaya, these blue cows, and look, oh, there is a Nilgaya. There is a herd of white cows. It said, if you're on Govardhan and you see a herd of white cows and there's no Gwala or cowherd man, then they're Krishna Balaram's cows. So I'm there in the forest and I say, oh, look through those trees. There is a beautiful scenery. There are the cows. There are the Nilgayas. Oh, see, and a person only gets caught in looking at the trees and the knots and the branches, and he doesn't see the forest. So the rituals and principles are to create a perspective by which you look through to see the ultimate goal. So they're performing their rituals, but the ultimate goal is there. And not only ultimate goal is right there, Krishna and Balaram tending the cows, but they're in need and they're hungry. And therefore they say, if you have faith, Dharma Vitana, O best of the knowers of the principles of religion, come out the best of the knowers of Dharma, the best, sarcastic, the best of the knowers of Dharma, Dharma Srunushtita Pumsam, Viviksena Katasye, Nopadiye Yatiratim, Shrameva Kevalam. That if your Dharma or the activities you're doing doesn't lead to bhakti, which means a taste for Hari Katha, Shrama Eva Hi Kevalam. It has no value. So here's the classic example. They're performing so many rituals, but they're not understanding the purpose of these rituals. And when you separate the rituals from the purpose, then the rituals lose their value or meaning. And that's what happens in modern days. there were rituals, but initially they had some purpose. And if they're just carried down rote in tradition, by the time you get them, they're just some ritualistic activity. The religion is just a form that doesn't actually serve the heart. And therefore, spiritual people, people who are searching, they sometimes tend to reject the religious traditions, whether it's with Christian, Hindu, or Jewish. They tend to reject it because as discriminating, intelligent people and searching for an experience of the heart, when they see that it's just some form, an empty shell, even the holy name of Krishna to fully manifest has to manifest from our heart. The holy name appears first in the heart and then the lip, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said. So here, this is the essence of this story. Therefore, O Brahmanas, Dvija, I mentioned this last time, Dvija. Dvija means twice born. It's supposed to be an elevated status. But if your twice born nature, if the second initiation that you've gotten is just a thread over your shoulder, and it's not an impetus to deepen your spiritual life, then you are Dvija. The significance of it is Dvija, Dvi tu, Jabwan. Your significance is you're born of two parents. That's your only significance. Dharma, Vittima, O knowers of the religion. And now they go on. Pikshaya Pashu Samstaya Kshatra Manyascha Satama Anyatra Dikshatasyapi Nanam Ashnam Idushati. Except during the interval, the cowherd boys are speaking. But how are they speaking? They're speaking in the mood of service to Krishna. And therefore, whatever words they say have significance and are filled with love. And therefore, Jiva Goswami said the Bhagavatam is not just filled, it's not just rasa in the Bhagavatam. He said it's composed of rasa because it's spoken by great souls and the stories are about other great souls speaking. And therefore, what's ever spoken is spoken with love. And that's the significance of any word and any activity. When I first saw Prabhupada for the very first time in Idlewild International Airport, which later became JFK, or maybe it was already JFK, and I saw Prabhupada coming down the stairs, and he moved his hands to greet the devotees. Even though his hands was just moving gently to wave to us, it had so much significance to me, because I saw that movement of the hand was not an ordinary movement of the hand, but behind it was a deep and loving consciousness. And therefore, when you see a pure devotee move, you see a pure devotee speak, you get his conviction and his affection. Amritananda, you can still hear? Hi, Bo?
Yes,
okay,
everyone.
I'm hearing you.
Okay, everyone can hear, okay. So, even this, now they're trying to convince all they want, they're going to speak knowledge. But what is their knowledge? They're going to try to please Krishna. They want food for Krishna's senses. They said, except during the interval between the initiation of the performer of the sacrifice and the actual sacrifice of the animal, almost pure Brahmins, it is not contaminating for even the initiated to partake of food, at least in sacrifices other than the Shotramani. So what are the cowherd boys doing? You can see, even though they're simple cowherd boys, when your inspiration is service, then Krishna speaks in the heart in very profound ways beyond your personal samskara or capability. So here are the cowherd boys, so they're anticipating the Brahmins may object. Dikshita no abunjita. One who is initiated to sacrifice should not eat. an example. We're Brahmins. We're doing the sacrifice. We've installed ourselves as the priest of the sacrifice. How can we give food until we eat? So here, the cowherd boys, anticipating the possible objection that they could not give any food because they themselves had not eaten, and the priest initiated should not eat, they informed the Brahmins about various technicalities. So this is very interesting now. Iti te bhagavad yachnam shrinvato pi nishushruvu shudra saburi karma no valisha vridamanina. The Brahmins heard this supplication from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this was communicated in parampara, the desire of Krishna, I want to eat, communicated to his servants. And now the greatest blessing is when that desire of Krishna is communicated to you, that here is some service for Krishna, coming in parampara, perfectly carried. You want to please someone, you have to understand their desire. It's actually this one very nice devotee when we went to Mayapur, Mother Srimati, extremely wonderful Vaishnavi and very deep spiritually and attached to the holy name. I one time saw her before the deities, and afterwards I spoke to her, and she shared her realization. She said, from Nam Seva comes Dam Seva, and from Dam Seva comes Kam Seva. I said, Kam Seva? She said, yes. When you serve the name, or maybe it was the Dam first, or from Dam Seva, you get Nam Seva. From serving the holy Dam, then you get service to the holy name. The holy name is a service. It's Krishna's internal potency. When we chant the holy name, Krishna is pleased. And we should chant the holy name for the pleasure of Krishna, understanding that he's actually hearing the holy name. And from the Nam Seva comes what? Kam Seva. You can serve Krishna's desire. The holy name reveals the heart of Krishna. And the devotee wants to know the heart of Krishna because he wants to please him. This is called priti. Priti or love. In the priti sandarbha, it's very nice. Love or priti, which is the goal. The goal of life is to have love for Krishna. Priti has three aspects. The first aspect of priti is that you desire to please the person whom you love. The second aspect of priti is that you desire to attain that person. You want his association. Why? So that you can serve and please him. And the third aspect of this priti is that even though you don't have a desire for personal pleasure, there's great bliss and enjoyment in doing so. So this is actually the mood of the devotee. They simply want to please Krishna, know his desire, then attain the association of Krishna. This is real attachment for Krishna, that we want Krishna. We want to be with Krishna. We want to serve Krishna. We want to please Krishna. And from that, automatically, so much pleasure will come in the heart from serving Krishna. And that pleasure that comes in our heart from serving Krishna is what will actually please Krishna. When we are actually happy that he is pleased, that happiness we feel in our heart will actually give him pleasure. So now look at these Brahmins. They heard this supplication from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, yet they refused to pay heed. They could not hear. And the words are very significant. Shrinvata na shushrava. Hearing but did not hear. I always joke that sometimes I have to translate this into Brooklyn language. It says, Shrinvata hearing, Shushravo, they did not hear. They heard, but did they hear? And Krishna is come and he wants to give you service. Also, we also don't hear. Guru, Vaishnavas, Srila Prabhupada, they're saying, we have service for you. We want to give you service. Bhadram. We want to make your life auspicious. We want to give you the service of Krishna, the greatest jewel of life. That which, if you accept sincerely, will give you ultimate happiness. So it says, Trinvita na Shushravu, they heard, but they did not hear. So I said, translating to this into my local vernacular, it means it went in one ear and out the other. It shouldn't be that we can put a string through one ear and pull it out the other ear. There should be something inside that retains it. And that is our conviction and faith that it's worthy to be contained. It's worthy to consider. It's worthy to realize. It's worthy to apply. So look at the condition of these Brahmins. They hear this, yet they refuse to pay heed. Why? Kshudra asa. They were full of petty desires and therefore entangled in these elaborate rituals. They were so busy with the rituals and which were actually connected with petty desires to swaga or heavenly enjoyment that they could not hear. And this is such a key point in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. I've discussed this in other classes. I'm not sure I want to discuss it here. But one of the main things that prejudices the ability to actually hear truth as truth is our own agenda, our own personal attachments. That's why, in fact, a Brahmin is one who is suited to get knowledge, because a Brahmin is detached. And when you're detached, you can hear the truth no matter what that truth says. And when you're detached, you can speak that truth no matter what the consequences are for speaking that truth. So buddhi karmana, they're entangled in ritualist activities, and they're prejudiced by their petty desires and can't hear the desire of Krishna mercifully being presented in parampara to them. And therefore, very interesting, it says, Alisha Vrida Manina. Though presuming themselves advanced in Vedic learning, they were actually inexperienced fools. Vrida Manina, they were thinking, I am wise, but Balisha. Bhagavad Gita says the first instruction that Krishna gives to Arjuna says the very, very same thing. Asochan anvasochas tvam, pragyavadam shabhasate, yatasun agatasun cha, nanu sochinta pandita. Although you are speaking very, very learned words, you're just a fool. First thing Krishna says, because the wise man laments neither for the living nor the dead. The wise man understands. He laments. The wise man is compassionate, but he laments for the right thing. He doesn't simply lament for the inevitable that one is changing body. He laments for the person's ignorance, whereby he's identifying with that change of body, where he's identifying with the self, identifying the body as the self, and therefore experiencing non-existence, although non-existence is illusion. So we're very compassionate for people suffering, but we're not compassionate for the inevitable. We're not compassionate. We don't lament for the inevitable. So they presume themselves advanced, but they're such inexperienced fools because they're not taking the desire of Krishna in their heart. So we can do another verse. I do today somehow or other, although I can't hear you. I feel a very attentive audience. Spiritual life means consciousness. As you become more and more advanced, you're not just doing an activity, you're doing it with a particular consciousness. And in fact, the difference between bhakti performed out of attachment and bhakti performed out of rules. If you just perform, if you're just doing something because it's a rule, and until we become spontaneously attracted to Krishna, we do have to guide our life by rules and regulations. But if you're only doing it because it's a rule and regulation, I'm doing this because I should do it because it says it in the Shastra. If that's the only reason you're doing it, then the benefit you get is from the rule and not necessarily the activity. But when you have bhakti, when you're actually conscious of the activity and you're trying to do it for the pleasure of Krishna, then the benefit comes not just from the rule, but how the rule is applied. And the very nature of bhakti is that bhakti has independent potency. This is a whole other description, but I don't want to go there right now, but it's sometime I'd like to go there because it's a very, very interesting point. But bhakti has vastu shakti. There's potency in the activity itself. And therefore, when one has bhakti, then all the purposes of religion are satisfied. When you actually do something with devotion or bhakti, then if you have bhakti, you're free from false ego. If you have bhakti, you're dedicated. If you have bhakti, you're self-absorbed. You're absorbed. If you have bhakti, you're selfless. If you have bhakti, you're humble. Therefore, bhakti, the consciousness, the deep intention to please Krishna, is the essence of all religion, and it's the topmost yoga. Because all other dharma and rich and religious practices are meant to get you to the point where you're selfless and focused and dedicated and humble. Therefore, they're all ultimately meant to get you to bhakti, to get to change your heart. And that's the beauty of the process of Krishna consciousness. Because when you focus your consciousness on Krishna, the absolute reality, whether it's by option or life, the result is the same. And the result is attachment for Krishna will grow in the heart. And that attachment for Krishna is the real identity of the living entity, which is the objective of liberation. The objective of liberation is Mukirhidva Yata Rupam Sarupena Vivastita, to give up false identity, false conceptions, and embrace the real identity, the Sarupena Vivastita, to be situated in our own natural identity. And our own natural identity is a devotee of Krishna. And devotee of Krishna means one who is attached to Krishna, has devotion for Krishna, has priti. He wants to please Krishna. He wants to be with Krishna so that he can serve Krishna. And he has happiness in his heart naturally for doing so. So this type of religion exhibited by the Brahmins, where they're just following rituals, is condemned. Even though they know so many verses and have so many different tantras and mantras. Now we'll do one more verse for today. I hope I didn't get off on a tangent. It was a very, very interesting point. And sometimes if I speak something and then, because I can't see the audience and I can't really entertain questions so much in this format, if something confuses you, perhaps I haven't explained something carefully, then others may also have that same problem. Then drop me an email. And then the next class, I can clarify it for everyone. Let's do one more verse. Desha kala pratag dravyam mantra tantra vijognaya devata yajamanascha kratur dharmascha yanmaya tambama paramam sakshad bhagavantam adokshajam manushya dristya dispragya. Although the ingredients of sacrificial, this is the cowherd boys of Sukadeva, although the ingredients of the sacrificial performance. So look at all the things that were there. Dravya, Kala, Desha, the place, the time, paraphernalia, the mantra, the Vedic hymns, the tantra, the prescribed rituals, the Ritvija, the priest, Agnaya, the sacrificial fire, Devata, the presiding demigods, Yajimana, the performance of sacrifice. So many things are there, the fires, the demigods, and the yet unseen beneficial results are all simply aspects of his opulence. The Brahmins Although all these are simply aspects of Krishna's opulence, the Brahmins saw Krishna as an ordinary human being because dushpragya, because their intelligence wasn't purified. They failed to recognize that he is the supreme absolute truth, the directly manifest personality of Godhead, whom the material senses cannot ordinarily perceive. Thus, bewildered by their false identification with the mortal body, they did not show him proper respect. They were Brahmins, and they let that designation go to their head. They're on the top of society, but they were supposed to be detached. But rather, it increased their false designation that I am something other than a servant of Krishna. I am a Brahmin. I know rituals. I'm learned. I know mantras. I perform austerity. And the more that false ego manifests, because one is not surrendered to Guru and Krishna, because one is not a devotee, and therefore because he's not a devotee, he's not seeing God's opulence as meant for his service. And thus, when he comes in contact with God's opulence, he tends to use it for his own aggrandizement and pleasure. And because of that, from that comes offense. They couldn't show the proper respect. Just like Indra is always given as the example, Tribhuvana Aishwar, he has all the opulences of the three worlds, and he's a devotee, but he becomes bewildered. And what happens is, his false ego means ahankara, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer, and then in that consciousness, whatever comes to you increases that sense of ahankara, till you cannot identify yourself, which is the servant of Krishna, you cannot see God, who is the real enjoyer and controller, and you cannot recognize others as Krishna's servants. You think that they're your servants. So as the ahankara develops, because one is not consciously focused on serving the Vaishnavas in a humble mood, because he's not wearing the Siddha mantra of Trinada Pisa Nichena, Torora Pisa Hishnana, Amanina, Madanena, Kirtaniya Sadahari, the Siddha mantra that one should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street, more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant constantly, because he's not keeping that around his neck, which means he's keeping it close to him, and he's trying to act on that platform to actually cultivate this mood that I am the servant. Then whatever he does increases this false identification, and therefore, he cannot relate properly to others because he's on a false platform. And the example of Indra was, when his guru came in, he did not get off the throne. His guru looked at him and understood from his actions that this person is an illusion. And therefore, because he's an illusion, I will not be part of his illusion and increase his illusion. I will disappear and teach him a lesson. In the Shikshastakam, the second verse, this Trinadapi verse, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains why humility gives one taste. Because humility protects one from offenses. And the only reason we are not experiencing spiritual phenomena is because of offenses. It's just as the eyelid is covering the eye. Humility protects us from offenses. Why? Because all offenses are caused by the false ego. Offense means not to respect something properly. And we can't respect something properly, especially something which is more exalted than us, unless we properly feel inferior to it. The false ego does not allow us to feel inferior to anything. And because it doesn't allow us to feel inferior to anything, we can't experience those things which are glorious and greater than us. And therefore, the devotee is in that humble mood, and therefore he's experiencing the glory of the holy name. He's experiencing the glory of Govardhan. He's experiencing the glory of the dust of the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas. He's experiencing the glory of the dust of Vrindavan. So here we can see it's a classic example. The Brahmins, there's all these ingredients for sacrifice. They don't realize they are Krishna's and meant for Krishna's glory. And therefore, they couldn't recognize Krishna, and they're bewildered, and the result is offense. Offense simply means not the proper regard or respect. We go before the deities, but we're in a consciousness of false ego. We're not Krishna conscious, and we see, oh, these are just statues. Here, let me just throw something before them and chant some kind of half a Gayatri and take it for our pleasure. So this is nice to hear the Bhagavatam, to associate with something that is superior, and to hear it in the right way so we can digest it, not that it was in one ear and the other, and we actually experience its glories. And then we'll see, well, I'm going to stop here, what happens next is very interesting. It says the Brahmins fail to reply even with a simple Om. What does Om mean? Om is the manifestation of reality in sound. Is reality, and reality is God. And God is manifest in sound. And the pranava, the one of the manifestations of that absolute reality is Om. And what is the Vedas? The Vedas is a description of reality. So in a proper culture, if something is true, you say, Om. That is reality. You acknowledge it. You say yes, no, you say Om. That is connected to the absolute reality. So they fail to reply even with Om. They couldn't even reply. Just see the condition of such people. I'm actually want to go further, but I think I'm going to stop here for today. And generally, what I do, I told you, I don't take this. Now there's so many people, we don't take attendance. I know who's on the list, but sometimes I just have a 3 or 4 minute global community just to give me a sense that there are people there that I'm speaking to. So it's getting late for you. It's 10:13 for you. It's 8:45 in the morning for me. So thank you very much. Vancha kalpa guru bhyascha. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.